through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number two of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We've heard a lot over the last couple of days from Pete Carroll and John Schneider. Both had press conferences, both spoke with John Clayton. Before we get to that audio, though, we've talked a bunch of times about how this may be the most important offseason since whatever the most important, you know, last offseason was. Do you think that right now, Pete Carroll and John Schneider are more confident going into this draft than they were last year?
I do, just from the standpoint of they were going into last year's draft with only four picks. They were going, how in the heck are we going to better our situation? There was no way that John Schneider and Pete Carroll wanted to go enter into the draft with four draft picks. So they're in a much better situation, a healthier situation in terms of the draft. And so I think that they feel pretty good about where they currently sit. But also a lot of this is going to be a domino effect about how the free agency period plays out. What ends up happening? I mean, obviously, we talked about the big one, which is Clowney. A lot of things are going to move with what ends up happening with Jadeveon Clowney. And that part of it for them is going to be critical because, as John Schneider pointed out last year, was after the season and around this time, they were more than confident that Frank Clark was going to be a part of this team. They thought he was going to be a part of the future. And what ended up happening was, he got way too expensive, way too fast, and they had to make a move. And from that point, they looked at it and said, okay, instead of having one of the best edge rushers in the game, we've got to create depth. We've got to create ourselves with more draft capital and capitalize on that situation. And they were able to make the best out of that situation. But this year, it's somewhat similar but different in the sense that they've got better draft picks. And they're really banking on, you know, the potential of signing Clowney, but they won't be panicked if they don't get Clowney because there's other good options out there in free agency as well, and their ability to, you know, put together a defensive line at that point I think could be beneficial for them, not necessarily hurt them long term.
I guess when I ask that, I mean coming off the previous season, like they just. They're 11-5 last year. They're a 5 seed. They won a playoff game. And you're right. I mean, they've got more draft picks this year than they had last year. But, I mean, I just feel like, I don't know, they were disappointed in last year's team to some extent.
It's a good question. I see what you're saying now. Do you think that they feel confident in their own scouting after last year's class?
Right.
I mean, although I would say some of that were notable injuries, and I know already what Jake is thinking is that those guys were also healthy at some point in the season, early in the season, and didn't get as much playing time as you would have liked to see, and that was a problem. But one thing I will add to that is that their 2017 class started to come along pretty well. You had Rasheem Green in there. Was he 2018, 2017?
I think he was 2018. Yeah.
You had a couple guys, Shaquille Griffin taking another step forward. So you had guys from some prior draft classes that I think they started to like the development they were seeing from those guys. And so I don't know that they look the year after and doubt those picks. You also did have a strong year from DK Metcalf. I know guys will point and say, well, that's one guy, but it was a guy you were really counting on and it worked out.
Right. And it was a successful season despite certain position groups. I mean, here's Schneider talking about the secondary from last year.
I think just like every position, you know, you're constantly like just, you know, looking to tweak it and figure out how you get better at whether it's at strong safety, free safety. I mean, we obviously we want to get better. If I told you we were, you know, that we were satisfied with the performance, I'd be lying. So we all need to get better.
I love when it's great when somebody prefaces a criticism by like saying, yeah, I could get better too. It's like, yeah, we all need to get better.
It's just an easy way to kind of gloss over the answer, right?
It is, unless you're the person being spoken to, then you could see right through it. It's like, all right, don't give me your, you know, you could get better too. Just tell me what I'm doing wrong.
Yes. It is from their standpoint, I look at the roster and defensively, how do you not look at every single level and understand that you do need to get better at every position possible? And for them also, as they look at as blanket of a statement as that is, I think that you do have to look at the way that you've drafted over the last couple of years and also look at the way that you've gone after free agency. They haven't, again, John Schneider has done a great job, but there also have been holes and gaps in terms of the ability to draft and plug in superstar players, right? Like Ziggy Ansah, that was a situation where they took a chance, it didn't work out. I'm not necessarily mad at them for that because we all knew the situation that there was a possibility. There, you were hopeful that the injury he was coming back from wasn't as significant or that he could heal quickly from it. That certainly wasn't the case. Clowney, you're happy with that move. But in terms of this year's draft, this year's free agency, more so than any other year, you have to get superstar talent. They've got the depth around them. It's about getting that superstar talent.
Drafting for need, you mean? Oh, no.
You can't panic.
Panic for need. All right, so a couple other things here, thoughts on the draft specifically. Will running back be a priority?
Yeah, I mean we lost three runners in 13 days or something like that, you know, so I can't, you know, I'm not going to tell you like what positions, like what the priority is. I don't know with Rashad, I don't know, you know, if, you know, day one, if he's going to be ready to go. I would, you know, I mean, I can't tell you that, but, you know, CJ and Chris, yeah, CJ's unrestricted, so we'll see what happens there.
As much as they love who they have at running back and they love Chris Carson, and I think they still love Rashad Penny despite the injury concerns, I think that they do need to draft a running back badly. Because here's the thing with Carson. He's a young player, but he hasn't made it through a full season without being injured yet.
He was so close to doing it last year.
I know he was really close, but you know,
but he didn't.
But you know what? As you get older, you don't get more durable. I heard them talking about this on Bob, Dave, and Moore a little bit yesterday. Mm-hmm. But that was a great point. I mean, even though he's not an old player, can you really rely on him now that we have a 17-game schedule to worry about? You need someone else with him.
Well, and I think
that's clear.
Yeah, I agree. I think given when Rashad Penny suffered his injury, he unfortunately had to have that surgery in December, pretty late in the season, and so normally that recovery would take the better part of a year. So I don't think they're expecting him to be ready by training camp, at least. And should he start the season on the physically unable to perform list, that would mean missing time. And he could be out 6 weeks. Maybe he takes longer. Maybe he's back in 8 weeks. So you're looking at, if you don't bring back CJ Procise and if Rashad Penny can't start the season with you, you've got Chris Carson.
And you've got Travis Homer.
And
right?
Travis Homer. But you're going to want more depth.
You need more depth, absolutely. And you're going to have to make some changes there because I think the harsh reality of with Rashad Penny and his injury is that scenario you played out, Stacey, that is going to be the most likely scenario,
yeah,
is that Rashad Penny misses the majority or at least at very minimum half of the season. So they need a good, solid second running back that can, you know, carry the load along with Chris Carson, that can be an effective runner for you, and you don't feel like there's a significant drop-off. And that, I think that's why it was exciting to watch Rashad Penny start to, you know, put things together, because now you had a back that if Chris Carson wasn't on the field, all wasn't lost. You felt confident, and he brought something new and dynamic to the table. So I think that that's something that they're going to be desperately looking for. I don't think they go high. I don't think they spend high, you know, capital on him.
I don't think you need to.
But they're either going to spend a cheap free agent deal on a running back, or they're going to go into the later rounds of the draft to try and find somebody, and I think that would be a smart move.
Can we get Le'Veon Bell?
Yeah, I don't think we could get Le'Veon Bell.
Didn't they
Bell.
Say they Probably. Weren't looking to trade him?
Oh, that's right.
Little too expensive.
Gase just said the other day that they want to keep him. You're right. Good. This goes back to that concept that John Schneider does not like, drafting for need.
I think the biggest thing there is that you can't panic for need. You know, you can't just go out and say, hey, you know, we got to get, you know, just check boxes is what I'm talking about. Basically, we're going to find the best players all the way through the process. And throughout that process, that will mean checking some boxes of need along the way. And, you know, it's kind of unheard of to lose, you know, three runners in what, 13, 14 days. But, you know, we're blessed that Marshawn came back and helped us, and Homer did a great job. So we're, you know, there's a lot to build on, and we'll be addressing that position, there's no doubt.
Here's how I'm interpreting that. We aren't choosing a running back early, but we understand that as we go through the draft, we're going to see a running back we probably like, and yeah, we'll inevitably check that box. We don't want to make the priority checking a box. We want to make the priority get the best possible player, a player we can't believe is still there, a player that we did all of our research and months and months and months and months of research to find out where other teams would take him, so we knew he'd still be there. That's the player we're taking.
As long as you have plenty of picks, you can accomplish both. You can address the needs that you do have later on in the draft, and you can do what you were just talking about in the higher rounds of the draft. You can go grab that great player at whatever position he may be. Now, here's the thing. What if you saw the next Russell Wilson in like the second round?
Oh, like, so you're saying at quarterback?
Do you make an exception at that position? I think you do. I mean, obviously you do, because they haven't drafted a skilled quarterback since Russell Wilson.
Well, and they were reportedly very interested in Patrick Mahomes.
Yes.
Who, like, I think if he was available, they wouldn't have passed on him. And then you've got an interesting situation there.
But that's also one where you're at the point of coming up on Russell's contract, right? So there was a timing of that made a lot of sense. Right now, with Russell's deal currently, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to try and go after that type of player. But if it starts getting to the latter part of Russell's contract, then you probably don't pass up that situation, because you have to ensure your future, whether that's having your franchise quarterback stay there on another contract or possibly move on.
You mean they may panic for need, Jake?
Maybe.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Queen Charlotte Lodge. Right now, we're in four down territory.
This is four down territory
with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
You live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
All right, we've talked a ton about defense. What's one position, Jake, you're concerned the Seahawks might overlook?
The one position I'm concerned the Seahawks might overlook, with all of the emphasis being on defense at this point, is offensive line. That's the one position that concerns me. I think that is a position that still needs a lot of concern and a lot of look. And I think that they need to really invest in at least one more position on that offensive line, whether that be through the draft, at drafting a right tackle, or signing a good proven commodity, not an older commodity, a proven good young player that could come in at the guard position or the tackle position. So that to me is something that I think would still hopefully be on the table for the Seahawks as they're moving forward and approaching this offseason. I don't think that the Seahawks have enough young talent to be able to fill in three, potentially four needs on that Seahawk offensive line from within. So that's something that I am curious to see how they're going to go about filling that offensive line and putting it all together for Russell Wilson.
Second down. Stacey, how many edge rushers in free agency have the Seahawks identified as potential fits?
Well, John Clayton, who's joining us in about 45 minutes, asked Carroll that question earlier today. Here's what he had to say.
There is a pretty good group of guys, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how that all comes down. There's a half dozen guys that have been effective, maybe more than that, half, you know, dozen that we're looking at for sure, that have been effective and put up some numbers and could add to a club and could help us. And so, you know, we just have to see how it sorts out.
So a half dozen, about six, maybe a little bit more than that, six, seven veteran pass rushers on the market right now that they have some interest in. Now, is Clowney involved in that group, or are these guys outside of that? I interpreted it as maybe some additional guys that you're taking a look at. And so you could read it a couple ways. You can read it as they plan to make moves on defense, and acquiring guys in free agency is a big part of that. So there's guys they're very seriously considering. These could also be guys that they're considering if they can't get a deal with Clowney done. And Pete said earlier at early 11 in the early part of that interview that there are guys that are with them that they won't necessarily be able to re-sign. So So I still think that they will get the Clowney deal done. Obviously, it's going to be a big price tag, and it won't be easy, but I'm just of the camp right now that it's a priority for them. But I think that I wouldn't be at all surprised to see them add another guy. I'm certainly curious to know who some of these guys are.
He said half a dozen, right?
He said about half a dozen guys. There's a half a dozen guys that have been effective. Maybe more than that, a half dozen we're looking at for sure.
Do you know what half a baker's dozen is?
Seven?
No.
Six and
Eight?
A half.
Six and a half,
yeah. Dang it. What's a baker's? Is it 13?
Yeah.
I hate myself.
Third down.
Don't say that.
Why?
I got her, Jake. I zinged her.
Got her good.
I don't like it. I'm going to make more puns now.
Tom, what'd you do?
Does hand size actually matter for quarterbacks, Jake? Does size matter?
Hand size, really, ultimately, it matters and it doesn't matter. And it's funny that I'm, you know, giving that answer, because the reality of it is that in terms of hand size, in terms of cold weather games, in terms of the rain, it can have an effect in terms of how big your hands are, how comfortably you're able to grip the football. That does have an effect as a quarterback in terms of the way you can control the ball down the field and all that. Now, there have been plenty of quarterbacks in the league that have shown us that it is not a situation that you should be destroying a quarterback's career, saying that he can never play at that level. I think it's just one of those minor concerns that you have, that you go back and watch the tape.
You just can't
go
play
back
in the
and see.
Snow, that's all.
Yeah, you just can't play in the snow, you can't play in the rain, you can't play in the cold. So
looks like
I think that it's a much more overblown issue than actually giving credence to, but it's something that you do have to look at, and if there's any glaring things that show up when you watch film and watch a player in cold weather or the rain, that's something you got to take into consideration. But that's just, again, it's minor details of an evaluation.
Who's got the biggest hands you've ever seen on a quarterback?
Russell Wilson has pretty big hands.
Yeah, I was actually going to say it possibly is going to be Russ. Yeah, I mean, he's got really big hands. That's all the guys I've come across. I think Russell's got the biggest hands.
I started making a pun to Curtis. I left my mic on. Curtis, did you like it?
Let's get to fourth down.
Okay. Not a big deal.
Jake.
Thank you, C-Raj.
Jake.
Yes.
Make a pun.
Yeah. See how hard it is, Jake.
See, that's why I don't even try. It is hard, and two, I don't even want to go there.
You can just go, I'll tell you what it was. I said, looks like big mitts don't just matter in baseball, right, Curtis? Right? Am
cricket,
I right?
Cricket, 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 cricket.
I'm just saying, sometimes you need to take chances. They're not all going to land.
Jake!
Yes.
If the Seahawks don't sign Clowney, who else would you like them to sign?
Now, hear me out on this one.
Oh, no.
Hear me out. I think that this could
exciting.
Be a really cool possibility. Now, the next guy that I would really target if I were the Seahawks, no question about it, would be Dante Fowler Jr. I think that he is a guy, in terms of his quick twitch, his ability to play on the edge, I think really fits into what the Seahawks like to do and the type of player that they would like to acquire. Now, I would like to couple that with somebody else. Now, Dante Fowler Jr. would be a great addition. I don't think he can be the sole addition. So, an interesting trade that I've heard of that I think could really work in this situation, after you sign Dante Fowler Jr., I think you could go out and trade a second-round pick to the Denver Broncos for Von Miller. I think if you could possibly swing that with Von Miller and Dante Fowler Jr., I think that could be a pretty sweet combination if you're the Seattle Seahawks. Now, the Denver Broncos asking price could be a little bit higher than that, but from what I've heard, you know, second round pick might be able to get it done for the Denver Broncos, and I think I would take Von Miller right now over any potential second round pick the Seattle Seahawks could acquire. The other name that's really intriguing to me that I really like is Robert Quinn. Robert Quinn is a proven veteran, a commodity, a guy that last year on a one-year deal with the Dallas Cowboys had a higher pressure rate than Jadeveon Clowney. I think that he could be a guy in terms of that edge rusher role that could really fit in well with the way the Seahawks want to play. So that when you put Clowney out of the equation, it really gets you to be comfortable with the idea that they could really sign two really good proven commodities out there.
Was Robert Quinn double team, though, as much as Jadeveon.
He was not.
I didn't think so.
He was not. But if you have Fowler Jr. and Quinn on the field at the same time, the likelihood that they're going to both be facing double teams, not going to happen.
Do you think a second-round pick would really be enough for Von Miller?
That's the word on the street. It would be hard for me to think that that actually could follow through.
It's got to be a second and something next year.
But Von Miller being a player who's 30, 31 years old, it's a possibility. I wouldn't rule it out, especially with the way Denver is going right now as a team. They may be looking to move on from some of that salary and trying to get younger and trying to start rebuilding this thing around Drew Locke.
I could see them wanting to do all of that. It's just that Von Miller, he's 30, and look, for a linebacker, that's not ancient.
No,
and
it's not.
And he is a star player. So they're probably going to want something more than a second rounder.
Possibly, but that's something that I've heard that I've thrown around, and if that actually could work, I mean, I think the Seahawks would be crazy not to do it.
Right, which is why I think the Broncos would want more, because that would be a true fleecing.
It would be awesome.
Did you say the word on the street is a second rounder?
Yeah, the word on the street, yeah.
Like there's guys on the street talking about this?
All the kids are talking about
it. Someone just walks up
to
Jake on the street. Hey, tell me if you thought about this. Von Miller.
I don't reveal my sources, but yeah, you can walk around the street and you can hear some things.
A couple of the guys down at Billy's Auto Mechanic.
Yeah, I mean, it could be there. It could be somewhere else.
You know how you say the word on the street in Spanish?
No, I don't.
What is it?
La palabra and la calle.
Wow, and the pronunciation is just...
It's on point.
It's on point.
La palabra... And La Calle.
Stop.
The halftime show is next.
It's time for the halftime show.
The half is not over. There's 3 seconds on the clock.
Revisiting the biggest stories of today at the midpoint of the show.
The halftime show. It's not easy.
Now, here's Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Hey, I want to offer a theory here about Russell Wilson.
Okay.
I just ran this one by Jake. We often comment on Russell Wilson's hair, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's real short. Sometimes it's, curly. I think it's just sort of naturally curly, whatever. This just came up in my Twitter feed, which is why I'm bringing it up now. On February 26, 1983, Thriller by Michael Jackson reached number one on the Billboard 200. And as I'm looking at the cover of it, I think Russell Wilson is trying to look like Michael Jackson from that era.
I don't think so.
Yeah, well, he is.
Didn't he kind of say he was growing out his hair as like a superstitious kind of thing during the season?
Well, he can say whatever he wants.
But he cut it off.
He's a big Michael Jackson fan. Like, this is his favorite album. Tom. I know
I mean, maybe, but I think, I don't know if that was the original plan.
Tom's got the inside track on this one.
I don't. No, it's another wild guess.
Look, Russell and I talk almost every day.
Dude, if it's your favorite singer... That can't be by coincidence.
Jake, you think that's part of it?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
Come on!
No, I don't think it is at all. I think it just so happens to have the fact that they have similar type of hair.
Man, you guys are something else.
Tom's so mad. He brought out a picture on his phone. I just realized that. He's holding his phone in front of our faces. Look at the album cover.
No, because I didn't. I wanted to make sure you knew talking about.
I do know now.
Okay.
Yeah.
The cover of Thriller is iconic, but just in case you didn't know,
yeah.
Trying to help you out.
Okay.
LJ Collier, what's the expectation, people? What are we going to do with this guy? He's a first-round pick. I would be happy. I'd be satisfied if they could turn him into a productive enough player, probably on the interior part of the line, where he could just draw a little bit of attention away from their big-time pass rushers. Whether that's Clowney on one side and somebody else on the other, I'd be satisfied with that. Not everybody on the line has to be Clowney.
No, not. There's hardly anybody that's Clowney. But, Tom, what does that even mean?
What do you mean, what does that mean?
What does it mean to...
It means I'm lowering the bar based on what I saw last year.
Right, but you've got to be a good player to draw attention away from others.
You don't have to be great, though.
You don't have to
be... You have to be consistently good enough that they're going to scheme for you being a problem.
Yes. And for LJ Collier to be...
They have to account for you a little bit.
Always account for you, but to actually say we're going to double-team these guys and watch this guy and watch, 96, watch 94, watch whoever.
It's for LJ Collier, to me, my expectations will be that he eventually becomes that six, you know, six sack guy, you know, and a consistent player on a yearly basis. That's my hope for him. He's a guy that they see very versatile, that can play the five technique, that can play the three technique in, you know, pass rushing situations. And I'm hoping that that can come true here and we can start to see glimpses of that in year two. It's hard for me to buy the narrative and that LJ Collier's injury that he sustained in training camp was so devastating that he was healthy at the beginning of the year and was a consistent healthy scratch throughout the year. And when he got on the field, he did not show flashes of any sort of kind that we could sit here and go, you remember that one tackle for loss that he had? Do you remember that one sack that he had or that disruptive play that he had in this game? I think that's sometimes where I have a hard time, because that is a position on the field where your talent, even if you're a raw player, your talent can come through and pop.
That's probably
even on
true.
One play.
Now, wait a minute. Have you watched every bit of film from every game?
No, I haven't watched every bit of film of every game, but there's not one play or one moment that I think anybody, I would be shocked that really anybody could point to and go, yep, that was the play that I thought LJ Collier was going to be special.
Well, somebody on that coaching staff better figure out how to use him, because he's a first-round pick, and he's taking up space if he's not going to be useful.
I think in year two he can be, but he's got a lot of work to do to be able to get himself to that
point. By the way, I sent out a tweet yesterday when I got home. I said, many of you think LJ Collier is a bust, but if they can coach him into a player that's good enough to draw a little attention away from Clowney, I'd call that a win. And it's certainly not too much to ask from a first-round pick. He, meaning LJ Collier, liked that tweet and then later on sent this out. He said, I've been an underdog my whole life. People have written me off time after time, and I came out on top. Watch me work.
Great.
Now, I mean, what I was saying about him there wasn't exactly flattering, so I apologize. But I guess I've got his back. Of anybody that I've heard, I support him.
Yeah, but you're lowering the expectations as to what he can do.
Yeah.
So he doesn't see that as
I wish somebody would have done that for me in life.
Lower expectations.
That's right. Tommy, from now on, forget about A's and B's. Just get C's and D's.
Oh, man.
Beautiful.
C's,
I got it.
C's get degrees.
C's get degrees. I wish somebody would have told me that back in 1999.
LJ Collier wants to be a frontline player, and hopefully he can use this whole situation to motivation. But if you're going to tweet out about all that stuff, you better be backing it up. And that's my hope. And like I said, I'm not writing the guy off. I like who he is. I like his mental makeup. I just hope that it can come through, because there's nothing really off of last year that I can take and that I can sell to you guys and the fans that, hey, this is the reason why LJ Collier is going to jump into year two, because I saw this last year. It's more just based off of the fact that he had a rough year one. Hopefully year two goes smoother for him, and that he's learned a lot and grown up a lot since his rookie season.
I'll certainly be curious to see what his year looks like with a full offseason. He missed training camp. He missed the preseason with that bad ankle sprain. And I think that both Carroll and Schneider have pointed to that as a big reason that he was slow with his development. So if he is able to make it through a full preseason and get a lot of work, I think then your expectations do change and the bar is raised.
Next. It's a very strange thing here that the guys who were in Mariners training camp that we're talking about the most, Jared Kelnick, Julio Rodriguez, are guys that we're not going to see at all until maybe at least, what, July, August for a guy like Kelnick?
You
probably won't see Julio Rodriguez at all.
No.
But for the guys that are going to be on this team in April, we're really not talking about any of them. I mean, I saw on Twitter a second ago, Daniel Vogelbach just singled up the middle and drove in Carlos Gonzalez. It's like, oh yeah, Daniel Vogelbach. He's a young player and everything, and maybe he's part of the future, maybe he isn't. But I mean, I've been there, done that with him.
So over it.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm over Vogelbach.
So 2019.
Yeah, exactly. It's strange that
there's still young players that are seen as like, all right, well, that's the old regime.
Right. I mean, J.P. Crawford is a guy who played for the Phillies. He's a guy who played basically a full year here last year. By the way, he made a heck of a stop, shortstop last night, made a great play. So that was actually pretty nice to see. But, you know, for the guys that are going to be here in April, we actually have seen a bunch of them.
Yeah, so, you haven't seen Evan White.
No, Evan White is really, he and maybe Jake Fraley.
You'll get a full season of Kyle Lewis.
Yeah, Kyle Lewis. See, again, what he did in September of last year, just raking.
Yeah.
I expect more of that coming into this year.
It's almost like you wish your debut would have been a little more quiet so that you could just be stellar.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
When you get some more. Now it's like, I'm sorry, you weren't hitting a home run in every game? What are you doing here?
But this is the exciting and fun part of this season if you can look at it from that point of view. If you can look at it from that lens, this is where the exciting part comes, right? Is seeing these players, seeing how they develop, seeing how they grow, if they do at all, right? And that's the part that I'm intrigued by most this season. It'll be kind of fascinating to watch how this all unfolds for the Mariners this year and see if they truly are a year or two away from making that big jump and run, or are they farther behind than even that they think they are. So, you know, you bring up, you know, we talked about with Salk earlier in the show about the expectations for Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez and why you don't bring up Kelnick right away. I think it's just an interesting conversation when you talk about these young star-studded players that are supposed to be cornerstones, potential cornerstones of your franchise moving forward.
What's your favorite song off Thriller?
Thriller.
Good answer.
Thank you.
Great answer.
Jake, you?
I don't know. I love all the songs on that album, to be honest. I hate to be that guy that's like, I don't point out one song, but Thrower's good. All the songs that on that album were great. I listen to it with Jackson all the time.
Thriller?
Oh, yeah.
When I was a kid, I had that record, and I played it so much that it was actually unplayable at one point because it just got so scratched up from overuse,
wow.
I suppose, yeah. Big, big album back in 83. Let me tell you all about it. Listen to our show via the 710 Sports app, powered by Dubin Law Group. We have good news, and we have a little bit of bad news for the XFL, too. We'll talk about that in the timeline next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Timeline
with Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Stacey, you a good dancer?
I think so.
Yeah.
Not right there in that moment. I'm restricted by the chair. I slept a little funny, so my neck, I can't move.
You can't do your thing.
Yeah. I wasn't my true self.
Jake, could you hold your own in a club?
Jake just stood up, by the way,
to
dance during that intro.
The man was fired up.
I'm so glad. How do you put this at 145? This is just, it's great. It's great every day. Now, no. The answer is no. I cannot hold my own on a dance floor. That's like one of the, if there were talents that you wish you could have, like, I don't know if you guys have a talent that
I'm
you wish you could
have.
I'm
talented at literally everything I do,
I figured that was going to be your answer, Stacey. But Tom, if there was a talent that you thought you had that you wish you could have, to me, one of those is dancing. Like, I watch people on the dance floor and they, you know, life of the party and all that. Man, I wish I could do that.
I wish I could do it, too.
Not me. It's not me.
We'll take dance lessons at some point.
Oh, wow, that's beautiful.
Wouldn't that be awesome?
What should we do? Should we do like a hip-hop class? Or should we do
like
a ballroom dancing?
Ooh.
Like, what kind of dancing, Tom?
I want to dance to Charleston.
What about Zumba?
Zumba.
No, that's like an exercise.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah.
That's an exercise.
That's an exercise. Okay. I don't want to get in shape. I said we had good news and bad news for the XFL here. Evidently, attendance at these games has been going up and up every single week. The XFL posted an overall attendance of 81,942 for its four-game slate in week three. So they're averaging just over 20,000 fans per game. Week one had about 20,000 less than that, 69,818. But television ratings down about 34% from week one to week two. They didn't have their ratings in for week three as of when I got this article. But from week one to week two, down 34%. Now, here's my question. The thing that the XFL wants long term is a lucrative media rights deal.
Yeah.
So if their ratings are going down, 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 I wonder if these media companies are looking at that saying, we don't want to get involved in this, and that ends up being the ruination of the league. Or they look at it and they say, you know what? Vince McMahon's behind it. We know that we see an opportunity for growth, even if they're not performing right now. Mm-hmm. Let's get in on it anyway.
It's certainly something to keep an eye on because, again, when we were going over Vince McMahon, that report that came out that said he understands he's going to be sinking money into the league for the first couple years, but that the hope is that the payoff is the TV deals and that that's where the money is. So it's great that attendance is up and it's great that fans are getting excited, but I don't know that over 3 weeks or a change week over week for the very first part of the inaugural season, if I were, you know, Vince McMahon or people making those big decisions, that I would worry too much about it. I think, too, you're kind of hoping that the quarterback play improves because I think that's where some of that TV viewing comes in, is people that are just curious about, you know, some of the players that might find time with NFL teams or just that, I mean, it's the way that the NFL has been pushing offense, too. I think it's just look at jersey sales. People like quarterbacks,
right,
and big receivers and, mm-hmm. and difference makers on offense.
Right. That's a huge part of it for me. When you look at the XFL, I think the concept, the play, the broadcasts are awesome. But just like I was saying after week one and week two, is that specifically for the Seattle Dragons, you've got to put up points, man. Like, you've got to put on a show. And after a while, that starts to get old when you don't have great quarterback play. You don't have an offense that is consistently moving the ball down the field and putting points up. That's something that it does become a problem as a viewer to really get bought into over time. Now, this is a loyal fan base. This is a group of Seattle fans that we've talked about before that are into it. The attendance was up just like it was in the their home opener. So I don't think that part of it is going away, especially in year one. But year two, when they come back in the XFL, they've got to continue to find ways to get more star-studded talent, get better quarterback play into the league. And I think that's where, you know, Vince McMahon is really banking on that, those TV deals coming through. And that's what's going to, you know, make this league successful long term.
Are you telling me? Are you telling me that fans don't want to see dominating defenses in the XFL?
Not at the expense of bad offenses.
Right. I think it's fun in person. It depends. There are some people. I like watching a really good defense, but I don't love a product when there's bad quarterback play.
True, but a really great defense can make decent quarterbacks look terrible.
It can, yes, it does.
Does that make sense?
I'm just trying to think of.
I'm just saying, Jake. Hypothetically, there's no great defense in the XFL. I'm just kind of joking around.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm with you. People who are watching on TV want to watch a show, a product. That's why I think to this point, when you go to the game, it's this entire experience of just sort of being there and watching something new.
Mm-hmm.
For people on TV or who are watching on TV, it's a different deal because there's a million things you could be doing other than watching that game on that particular channel.
Yeah, and that's a good point as well. And also, in the NFL, it brings star-studded players.
Right.
And that's the hard part for the XFL, is you haven't been able to bring on that star-studded commodity, you know, for the every single, you know, for the every, you know, day fan of the game. And that's something that, like I said, in year one, it's not a necessity. It needs to be a proof of concept. It needs to be, you know, something that fans can get behind in the local markets. But then overall, once it gets into year two, that's when you've really got to start, building and moving forward. And you look at the Seattle Dragons in particular, their offense right now, I think they're second or third in the league in terms of at the bottom of the league in terms of points. That's something that you unfortunately just can't have, you know, in terms of this offense. One, for the Dragons to be successful, but two, you know, it kind of over time it ruins your fan experience as you're trying to get into this team.
John Clayton joins us live from the Combine next. Get all the latest, what's going on there, the CBA, etc. We'll do that next on 710 ESPN Seattle.